Greetings to the brightest audience in the country. I am Bob Enyart, America's most popular self-proclaimed right-wing religious fanatic, homophobic, anti-choice talk show host. Wanted to talk about the surge of increased support for war in Iraq that we've seen in London this week, in England. Talk about that a bit later. And the terrible tragedy in Baltimore, where a mother and five children have been killed by the firebombing of their apartment, their three-story home, actually, where the mom was a neighborhood activist fighting against drug dealers, trying to take back the neighborhood. We've talked about that on the show, and even recently, and, well, I've said about that concept, that public policy move where the police and local law enforcement encourage neighbors to go and take back their neighborhoods from the drug dealers and neighborhood watches and all. That's basically bad policy, because the reason you have, you know, if you've got drug dealers, known drug dealers operating out of known crack houses in the neighborhood, and the police and the courts cannot stop it, then the courts and the police are a complete failure, and all these Band-Aid approaches are only covering up the problem. And so, sure, you might want to fight to save your neighborhood, but it's not the solution. It shouldn't be government policy that this is how we're going to deal with crack dealers. We're going to give grants to people to buy hot dog stands so that they could sell hot dogs and give away hot dogs on the street corners and scare away the drug dealers. Remember that story? I'm asking our studio audience. Yeah. Ha. There's some in our studio audience that remember that story from a few months ago. So anyway, this tragedy in Baltimore, the mother and five kids were killed, husband's in the hospital. But we'll get to that later. And we also have a false alarm on a Delta flight. There were sneakers in an overhead bin that were flashing and beeping, and it caused them to empty the plane and move the plane to a section of the airport far away from any buildings or other planes, and that turned out to be a false alarm. We'll try to get to that. But first, and above all these things, is the mummified dinosaur that they found in Montana that's just been talked about at a vertebrate paleontology annual meeting conference in Oklahoma. And this is cool, because whenever scientists make discoveries, it's always encouraging for those of us Christians who believe in creation and reject evolution, because one way or the other, you know, the truth is the truth, and whatever the truth is, it will line up and be consistent with your worldview if your worldview is correct. So we like the truth, and we love science. It's just the mythology of evolution that we oppose, and we like to use science in order to do that. Well, at any rate, they say that this is a 23-foot-long dinosaur with skin on. That's pretty cool. Only in this case, the skin on makes it creepy. You know the five-year-old kid who was afraid at night, and he shouted out to his dad, "Dad, I'm scared. It's dark." And dad said, "Son, God's in there with you." And he said, "Yeah, but I want somebody with skin on." Well, that's fine when you're talking about dad, but here's this 23-foot-long dinosaur. And the photograph, this is from MSNBC.com. The photograph, it's just a creepy-looking, you know, overgrown reptile. Reptiles just keep growing until they die. And the Bible says that early on, men and animals kept growing for a long time. They grew for a long time because they didn't die quickly, because the earth was created a paradise and it took some time to deteriorate as a result of sin and the fall. Well, at any rate, this thing was fossilized. And how were all the billions of fossils that are in the world, how are they all fossilized? What happens to form fossils? Well, what happens is a flood. And I know for years, decades now, I've noticed when there's stories about fossils, lo and behold, you find out, well, how were they formed? They were formed in a flood of some type. And so I thought we'd look into this article here. And let's see, only three other mummified dinosaur fossils are known to exist. That's cool. Only they're not really mummified, right? They're fossils. So that means their tissue have turned to minerals. And so you can see what the skin looked like, and you can even see the internal tissues and the stomach contents. That's all really cool. Let's see here. They named it Leonardo because someone had scrolled the name Leonard in the date 1916 in a rock nearby. So the discoverer named the dinosaur Leonardo. That's cool. And here we go. Let's see. Researchers said, we think that it was buried in wet river sand around 77 million years ago. Yeah, it was buried wet, all right. I'll give you that. I think your time frame is off, but not by a lot. You're only off by about 77 million years. But other than that, you're pretty close. And much of the flesh was intact when fossilization started. Yeah, I'll give you that too. Hey, people, you know, there might be liberals tuning in or evolutionists, and they say, well, how can you say 77 million years ago is off by 77 million years? Well, if you go to Hawaii, go on Maui, and there's a volcano there, Haleakala. And Haleakala has erupted in the recent past, you know, like in recorded history. And there was an eruption, I think, in 1801 that, of course, the lava flows out and it solidifies and becomes lava rock. And you could buy it and use it as soap or whatever. But anyway, some researchers have taken some of that rock from that lava flow and then they have it dated with, you know, a scientific dating mechanism. Maybe potassium-argon dating, some kind of radiometric dating. And they found out that it was 1.1 billion years old, that's when it solidified as a rock. So they were off by 1.1 billion years because it had erupted in, what was it, 1801. That was 200 years ago. So they're off by 1.1 billion years. But other than that, they were pretty close. Listener-supported radio, that's what we've got right here, Bob and Yurt Live. And if you're one of the ones who have enjoyed the show for some time and you've tried out some of our materials, well, thank you very much, because it's thanks to you and others like you that Bob and Yurt Live continues to reach more and more people. Now, we've been on the air for over 10 years, and I want to give out our phone number and encourage those of you who are interested but want to find out a bit more about us to call and check out some of our materials. Our number is 1-800, well, our call-in line is 1-800-8-NYART. The order line is 1-888-8-NYART. Same number, just 888-836-9278. You can try ordering the plot manuscript. That's my unpublished 320-page manuscript. It's my life's work. It presents an overview of the whole Bible. And if you grasp the big picture of the Bible, then you will have the key to its details. Christians debate details in the Bible, you know, ad infinitum, ad nauseum. Without end, they debate doctrinal disagreements. But the vast majority of Christians in such debates will admit that they're rather weak on an overview, a big picture understanding of the whole Bible and the story of the Bible. If you don't understand the story, the plot of the Bible, you're not going to do very well with the details. So it's $49.95 plus shipping and handling, money back guarantee. So give us a call, order the plot, check that out. 888-8-N-Yard. And for those listening on the internet, I'd like to tell you about a couple other videos. I've been telling you about some of our videos. And we've got one, Megan's Call, where it's just a chilling video. Megan's Call, a young woman or an older teenager, not sure. She was probably in her early 20s, Megan. And the whole hour-long tape is all Megan's Call. And she called in, and we had quite a conversation. And what came across was the cold heart, the hard heart of a young woman growing up in America today. Megan's Call. It's one of a trilogy, Megan's Call, Terry's Call, and Amy's Call. You might want to check them all out. We're back. Bob and Yurt Live, 1-800-836-9278. 1-800-836-9278. So, yeah, if you're off by 1.1 billion years, and some, you know, very sharp published degreed scientists over the years will point out how, you know, radiometric dating often gets things wrong and often completely wrong. When you go back millions or billions of years, they have been known to be off by millions and billions of years. When you go back thousands of years, they're known to be off thousands of years. I'll give you an example. Historians debate, they debate the dynasties in Egypt and which pharaoh and which artifacts are part of which dynasties. And sometimes they're off by 1,000 years. You know, they debate or disagree by 500 years, 1,000 years, by a millennia. Well, when did this particular pharaoh, when were these rocks carved with these inscriptions? And so if radiometric dating was that accurate, we're only talking about 3 to 4,000 years ago, not 77 million years ago or 1.1 billion years ago, you would think the scientists can solve all the debates about the chronology of the dynasties in Egypt, just solve it with scientific dating. And the historians, they tried that out. They tried it, and they gave up, and they kept their own arguments. And radioactive dating hasn't helped much with Egypt's chronology of the dynasties. So let's go to the phones. In Prescott, Arizona, Doug McBurney, what are you doing in Prescott, Doug?
I'm listening to Bob Enyart live on the mighty, mighty 670.
Come on, KLT is coming in Arizona?
Clear as a bell, Bob. It's beautiful.
Hey, Doug, that's amazing. You know why? Because Bob Enyart live, we broadcast in daylight for about half the year, but now we're in, you know, it's sundown.
Yeah.
And sundown, KLT does go to lower power, but I'm thrilled to hear we're still coming in there. And what a beautiful city that is you're in.
Yeah, it's really nice, Bob. And the next time I'm down here, you got to give me some flyers. I had no idea that your voice could be heard down here.
Yeah, we're going to have to take out an ad in the local. You know, I guess people from out of town would call it Prescott, but I think the locals call it Prescott.
Yes, I was corrected just a couple hours ago on that.
Oh, there we go.
Bob, they need to hear you down here. I was coming into town today. I was listening to a local Christian broadcast whose signal, yeah, by the way, doesn't come in nearly as clearly as yours.
All right. Okay.
And so he was discussing the gap theory.
Oh, come on.
Of Genesis. He presented both sides of the argument.
Yeah.
And he said that he was going to have to rely on his childlike faith in Genesis, and that his belief in God, to just believe that indeed God created it, everything. But he couldn't really settle this issue of the gap theory. And I thought to myself, if only this guy could talk to Bob Enyart right now. I'm certain, Bob, and I can't remember off the top of my head, but there is some credible passages in the Bible that refute the gap theory, and I couldn't think of what they were off the top of my head.
Well, how about, you know, all the scientific evidence that the Earth is not billions of years old? You could start there, and the solar system, and the universe, and the galaxies. You could start there. But then as far as the Bible goes, could there be a race of men who lived between Genesis 1-1 and Genesis 1-2 that God created, and then there was a large period of time, a gap, and then Genesis 1, verse 2, God began to recreate, and then in the recreation, then he re-inhabited the earth and redid the whole earth. That's the theory behind that's the gap theory. And that theory became popular among Christians in the 1800s after 1859 when Darwin published his Origin of Species.
So it's sort of a reactionary theology to evolution?
Yeah, before Christians had the time to get their scientific arguments in order and demolish the theory of evolution as we have and as hundreds of degreed scientists agree that we have. They, you know, panicked and reacted and said, okay, well, those millions of years, they fit right here in this gap between the first two verses of Genesis. But the problem is, in the New Testament and in the Mosaic Law in Exodus 21, God says in the Ten Commandments. I mean, that talk show host, you said he was a Christian talk show host?
I believe he was a pastor.
He was a pastor.
He was a pastor, and you know what, Bob? He said that it was the fossil record that left him unable to really reconcile Genesis with science.
The fossil record. I guess he doesn't know that fossils were laid down by a flood and that fossils are not created over long and gradual periods of time. In most fossil beds, you have huge cemeteries where hundreds, thousands, even millions of creatures are buried, all jumbled up and broken up often, you know, the results of a flood. But anyway, maybe he hasn't studied paleontology, but he should know the Ten Commandments.
Well, he is a minister of the gospel.
Yeah, and so let's see. What does it say? I'm going to have to do a warning, Will Robinson, there, Bible verses up ahead. For those of you in the audience who advocate pluralism and diversity, we know here at Bob Enyart Live that you would like to censor anyone who would dare quote a Bible verse in public. So this warning gives you fair notice. Raw, unadulterated truth is about to be uttered. All right. Hey, Doug, here's Exodus chapter 20. This is the first time the Ten Commandments appear in the Bible.
Okay.
And we read, remember the Sabbath day to keep it holy. That would be Saturday. 6 days you shall labor and do all your work, but the seventh day is the Sabbath of the Lord your God. In it you shall do no work. All right? And this is why. It says, for in 6 days the Lord made the heavens and the earth, the sea, and all that is in them.
Wow.
You can't get much more clear than that. God didn't make the earth and then a million years later or a billion years later rework the earth and recreate life in the oceans and birds and people. In the same 6 day period that he made trees in Adam, he also made the heavens and the earth. So there is not a biblical opportunity to insert a billion years between the first two verses of Genesis. If the Bible is accurate, God created in 6 days.
That's pretty compelling. I wanted to throw another one at you because this minister on the radio said that there was no compelling verse in the Bible to refute the idea that Lucifer fell sometime prior to creation. He said there's simply nothing in the Bible to tell us otherwise. And I could somewhere in the back of my mind, in a Bible study that I attended with you, I thought that you brought out some pretty compelling evidence that Lucifer could not have fallen prior to creation.
Well, that in and of itself it's almost like an oxymoron. You can't fall prior to creation because there's no created being to fall.
Oh, yeah.
And God created, God became the creator when he created, and he created the heavens, the earth, the seas, and everything in them.
So the angels would be included in that. Lucifer would be included in that.
Yeah, so would bacteria.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, Genesis 1 doesn't say, and God created bacteria.
No.
So we don't have to assume that bacteria was in existence before day one. But God created the heavens, the earth, the seas, and everything in them, excluding himself.
Wow.
So anyway, and we know a lot about when Lucifer fell, when he fell, how he fell, why he fell, what his sin was. And he was in Eden, the garden of God, and he said, I will rise above the clouds and be like the Most High. So the Garden of Eden did not exist before creation.
That is exactly the passage, or the reference that was coming to my mind. And I would encourage folks out there to find out where that is in the Bible, because I know you never tell.
Ah, well, sometimes I tell. But hey, and also, you know, he was the anointed cherub who covers, and God gave Lucifer as a covering. But anyway, not to get into all that, because, Doug, we have an album called Genesis the Fall.
And that's the study that I actually attended that study, and I remembered that you had some really solid stuff about the fall and all of that.
Well, the fun thing is to figure out, when did Adam and Eve sin? When did they fall? And you know, maybe another caller will call in. The lines are full right now, but maybe another caller will call in and will ask this question. So here's the question to another caller who's never heard one of my Bible studies. I'd like to know, about when, what kind of time frame did Adam and Eve sin? Did they sin after they were created? Was it, I'll give you a few orders of magnitude. Was it 1,000 years after they were created? 100 years, 1 year, or a month? Which order of magnitude would you think is closest to the truth? So, Doug, hey, thanks for calling in from Prescott, Arizona.
Yeah, hey, Bob, that's a great question. And one thing I know is that the local pastor, he could be listening. He could be listening. Way to go, KLT.
All right. Hey, God bless you, Doug. Are you going to be in studio Friday night, tomorrow night?
I'm coming back in the morning, Bob. I'll be there with bells on.
All right. Looking forward to seeing you. Thanks, Doug.
All right. Take care.
Doug travels all over the country. Well, all over the world, for that matter. And his work keeps him traveling. And then he'll go to Israel and Japan for ministry and vacationing. He's well-traveled. He's a lot of fun. And he's my Friday night co-host. Okay, so back to, well, I got to get to the phones. We're going to go to Indiana next, to Jerry. But this dinosaur that was found in Montana, it was buried, they say, in wet river sand. Yeah, and it was wet, but it wasn't a river. It was not a river. And it says the pollen from its stomach also shows that the environment was too wet for much deterioration to take place before. Yeah, too wet. You got that right. Hey, Bob Inyard here. And this conversation that Doug and I have been having and the fossils and all, it brings up two of our albums, our audio albums, Genesis Creation and Genesis the Fall. And they're both fun. And then a third, Genesis the Flood. Those three albums set the foundation for understanding all of the world, yourself, God, mankind, society, government, religion. You want to have a good understanding of the world you live in? Genesis Creation, Genesis the Fall, Genesis the Flood. Of course, you could read those yourself. First nine chapters of Genesis. Read them yourself, and that'd be great. And study, and super. But God has also given teachers, people. The New Testament says that God has given us teachers. In fact, the Old Testament, too. You could see that God had ministers who would teach, who were teachers who would read the word to the people and then explain the sense of it. That's what the Bible says, the Old Testament, that the teachers of Scripture would read the word very carefully and then explain the sense of it, what it meant. And you can usually get the general gist of what it means. But like with anything else, the more you study it, the more you'll realize. Okay. So now, let's see here. So Genesis Creation, Genesis the Fall, Genesis the Flood. Oh, those three are so much fun. And, hey, I have bad news. I don't know if I should give the bad news. I didn't prepare in advance to give the bad news. But I had been hinting that, you know, that we raised the price of the plot back to its original price after having reduced it for a couple years. And we just today raised the price of our audio albums back to their original prices. We cut our prices for, you know, very specific reasons. Well, because we had gone off TV. And we thought that once the radio show starts to build again, then we'll put the prices back to where we need them to be to try to survive financially and grow. So just today, we increased all our prices for all of our audio tapes and albums. So now, are those prices fully implemented throughout the ordering system? You mean if somebody orders tomorrow, they get the old prices? Wow. Bob Enyart here, 1-800-836-9278. Now, you know, that story during the break, this story about the dinosaur and all, it reminded me of another fossil story that came out of the Associated Press back at the beginning of the year in January 2002. And it was about rare fossilized jellyfish being found. And so my co-host here, Al the Fourth, he looked up the story for me during the break, and I've got it right here. Thank you, Al. And it was by the AP science writer, Andrew Bridges, January 25th. And it's jellyfish that were fossilized, which is very rare because they don't have a skeleton. They're soft-bodied. And it's rather unusual. It's like a dinosaur's skin being fossilized. Very unusual. Stomach contents. It's unusual. And jellyfish, they don't have a skeleton. They don't have an exoskeleton. They don't have a backbone. So, cool. Here we got these fossilized jellyfish. Well, you know what's interesting? You read this little story, and this little story of these jellyfish can convince you, if you're honest and open-minded when it comes to listening to scientific evidence, this little story will prove to you that the evolutionary time frame is completely wrong, and that how they lay down, they believe that the strata on the earth were laid down over millions of years, and we Christians say, no, the strata on the earth's surface, it was laid down within a short period of time, hours, days, weeks, and in some cases months, but very rapidly were these strata that cover the Earth's surface where they deposit it very rapidly. Here, this story, just this one little story will prove it to you. All right, here we go. Associated Press. More than a half billion years ago, here we go again, thousands of jellyfish were washed up in a small lagoon stranded by a freak tide. Well, it wasn't a half billion years ago. It was about 4,500 years ago. It wasn't a half billion. Okay, so they're only off by a half billion years. Not bad. Not bad in the curve. If you score evolutionists on a curve, not bad. They're only off by a half billion years. Okay, so thousands of jellyfish were washed up in a small lagoon. Small lagoon. Wasn't a small lagoon. Stranded by a freak tide. Flood. Can you please call that a flood? Please. Thank you. Noah's flood. Noah. The only thing freaky about it was the people that were being washed away. All my friends are washed away. I've been redeemed. Remember that song? Okay, so anyway, the jellyfish were washed up, stranded by a freak tide or storm. Yeah, you can call it a storm, all right. 40 days and 40 nights of a storm. And buried by sand just hours later. Fossilized impressions of those jellyfish, some up to 3 feet in diameter. Now, those are big jellyfish. And before the flood, many animals in the fossil record are big, just like the plants were big. And the ferns would grow 20 feet tall. Today, they only grow 2 or 3 feet tall. Anyway, big jellyfish have now been discovered in a Wisconsin quarry. And what scientists say is one of the largest finds of its kind in the world. Preservation of a soft-bodied organism is incredibly rare. Do you got that? Remember that. Incredibly rare. But a whole deposit of them is like finding your own vein of gold, said James Hagedorn, a scientist at the California Institute of Technology. The jellyfish, which have no durable body parts, were fossilized during the ancient Cambrian period when the world's oceans exploded with a diversity of life. Okay, the Cambrian, I thought it was the pre-Cambrian explosion. Let's compromise and let's just call it creation. Okay, during creation, that's when there was an explosion of life on Earth. And we could get a little more specific if we want, and we could say day 3, and day 5, and day 6. Is when the explosions took place. Okay, back to the Associated Press article. The creatures were apparently buried within hours after being stranded in a shallow lagoon some 510 million years ago. Notice, not 500 million years ago, 510 million years ago. Buried in a shallow lagoon? That wasn't a lagoon. That was formed. That was Wisconsin. It wasn't a lagoon. It was Wisconsin was formed at that time. Along with the rest of North America, the surface features of our entire continent were formed at the time. It wasn't a little lagoon. Well, anyway, back to the Associated Press article. In the quarry, beds of sandstone lie. Now, listen so closely, and this will educate you better than 5 years of geology classes at a local university. In the quarry, beds of sandstone lie stacked horizontally in neat layers. Now, how does the evolutionary geologist say that those layers were formed? Well, they don't really know, but they know how long it took. They say it took at least a million years. In fact, in this article, it says 12 feet of strata of these layers represent a span of time of up to 1 million years. So you got these strata, these layers, 7 layers of strata, and they say each layer took over 100,000 years to form. So now let's continue. Beds of sandstone lie stacked horizontally in neat layers, perfect for flagstone and other commercial uses. These could have ended up as someone's bathroom floor or in their garden, Hagedorn said. He's the scientist in California Institute of Technology. Let's see. Hagedorn said they found fossilized jellyfish in 7 layers in the quarry, encased in about 12 vertical feet of rock, representing a span of time of up to 1 million years. Now, think about that. They already said that this is incredibly rare to find a single fossilized jellyfish. They didn't find a single fossilized jellyfish. They have found hundreds of them, no, thousands of them, all washed up in a small lagoon. Well, apparently, the small lagoon was there for 1 million years through 7 different geologic periods. And in each period, thousands of jellyfish happened to wash up on this little beach in this small lagoon, stranded by a freak tide, and then hours later covered suddenly by sand, all to accomplish what is an incredibly rare event of being fossilized, even though they have no skeleton. All in the same spot, right on top of one another, over 1 million years. Maybe it was a jellyfish convention that they'd have every 100,000 years or so, and they'd hang out in that lagoon. And maybe that's why, and at every convention, there happened to be a freak tide, and thousands of them would get washed up on the shore of the lagoon. Obviously, this evidence shows us that however these 7 layers were formed and these jellyfish, thousands being fossilized with their bodies intact, obviously it all happened under a singular set of circumstances. It all happened at the same time in a short period of time. Isn't that obvious? It happened the same freak, absurdly rare occurrence in the same spot over 1 million years? No. It wasn't a lagoon that was being formed. The scientist says, it gives you a kind of aura of standing in this instant in time. You're standing right on the beach, just as it is formed. You're standing in Wisconsin, you knucklehead! And back then, it was Wisconsin that was being formed, not a lagoon. And, you know, this is true all over the world where you have a dozen, sometimes 20 strata right on top of each other, each one with the most unique and amazing deposits or whatever geologic peculiarity. It's right there in that locale, 10 times on top of one another. Whether it's fossilized trees or coal seams or whatever. Let's go to the phones in Indianapolis. We're going to take a break. I'm going to ask Jerry. Hey, Jerry, can you hold on through the break?
I can do that.
Okay, I'm going to put you on hold. And I'm going to ask Rich, too. Hey, Rich in Indiana, could you hold on during the break?
Sure.
All right, I'm going to put you on hold, and we'll be right. Let's see. I got a little bit of time, right? Okay. So, and I'd like somebody to let me know, is this reasonable that in Yellowstone, on one hillside, 12 forests would come and go and each one leave fossilized trees? Or did those 12 strata all happen at the same time? Hey, Bob Enyard here. Genesis creation, Genesis the fall, Genesis the flood. Those three albums are the foundation of understanding the world around you. And of course, they're the introduction to the Bible itself. And the stories that are in those books, you find around the world. You know, there are certain similarities that religions share around the world and through history. And atheists and skeptics will look at those similarities and say, see, Christianity is that their whole purpose is to disprove Christianity. They'll say Christianity is not true. Christianity believes a dozen things that a dozen other religions believe too. Why do they all believe it? Why do they all have those beliefs? Why do they all believe in an afterlife? Why do they all talk about some kind of a sacrificial system to atone for our sins? Why do they all believe in a flood when most everything was destroyed and everyone, and somehow somebody was saved in some kind of a vessel? Why is it that the ancient Chinese pictographs depict stories from the book of Genesis? And then once the earth, once the sons of Noah were separated, his descendants at the Tower of Babel, and everybody split, then that's it. The East, the Oriental peoples, the Chinese, the Japanese, there's no longer any recollection in their collective memory of Bible stories because they had then left. And so all the stories of Moses and the prophets and Jesus, none of them, they weren't found in China's language and picture writings until missionaries brought them there centuries, 1,000 years later, after the fact. But the stories, the things that happened before the Tower of Babel, you could find compelling evidence in the very culture of the Chinese people that they knew about those stories anciently. It's cool. Yeah, we cover these issues in these albums, Genesis Creation, Genesis the Fall, and Genesis the Flood. So if you're interested, call up and order them. Okay, Bob Enyart here, 1-800-836-9278. Let's go to Indiana. Jerry, speak your mind.
Yeah, Bob, I couldn't help but call you on this. I was going over with my son the other day. We occasionally get books from the library on different topics, different things.
Yeah.
And we've been doing some things on states, you know, what the states are, just children's books.
Yeah.
And this week I happened to get one on Tennessee.
All right.
And I'm reading in there, and I get to the third chapter, Tennessee Through History. The first sentence, scientists have found fossils and rocks throughout Tennessee.
Hey, Jerry, I happen to recall that they found a dinosaur skeleton on the surface in Tennessee.
Yeah, well.
But go ahead.
The first part here, they say the earliest fossils are the remains of water animals.
Huh.
Now, Tennessee is a landlocked state, for one.
You mean marine animals from the ocean.
Right.
Right.
So this is, these fossils tell scientists that millions of years ago, the area was covered by warm, shallow seas.
No. Tennessee?
So I asked my son, I said, Nathaniel, Tennessee has no, outside of the Mississippi River, has no water around it.
Right.
What do you think it could have been that covered Tennessee?
And what did he say? How
he looked
old
at me
is
with
he?
His big grin and said, the flood.
Noah's flood.
Yeah.
Hey, do you remember the Beverly Hillbillies?
Bits and pieces.
They packed up their stuff and they moved to Beverly. And,
right.
And, you know, the show is made in Hollywood, and the liberals. And so the whole family went to look at the ocean. And their tour guide, when they first got to California, said to the whole family, Jed and the whole clan, he said, you see that ocean? That's where we came from. Life came from the sea. And Granny said, the only sea I came from is Tennessee. And Granny is smarter than the scientists at the California right. Institute of Technology.
Right.
All right. Hey, thank you, Jerry.
You're welcome.
I appreciate that. Now, in Indianapolis, our number is 1-800-836-9278. Rich, speak your mind.
How are you, Bob?
Doing well, sir. Go right ahead.
That story you were reading about the jellyfish, that's just ridiculous what they say.
Yeah, seven layers. Each one having the most incredibly rare, and that's their words, incredibly rare happenstance of jellyfish being fossilized seven times over, thousands of times over a period of a million years, all in the same little quarry in Wisconsin, all in the same place. And they're so silly not to know that after the flood, there were thousands of jellyfish floating, like in a flood, things of like weight and size, like mass, tend to float together. And as the floodwaters subsided, they would get stranded, and the tide from the moon would pull the waters back and forth, and plants and animals by the billions were covered with sand and minerals. And so you have interweaving layers of coalified plant matter and sandstone or whatever kind of sedimentary deposits are there. And so that's what you got here. You had a bunch of jellyfish that were floating together that were buried as the waters were subsiding.
That makes sense.
Yeah. So what's up, Rich?
Well, just to add to that real quickly, you know, I work with plants. I'm a landscaper, so I work in the dirt and with trees and plants. And just in my landscape career, which has really been going for about 13 years, but I did it part-time for about 4 years before that. So I guess I could say I have about 17 years experience with dirt and plants.
Yeah.
And just what I've seen in my landscape life, I've seen, you know, weird things with living things. I've seen people with clay acidic yards with just the addition of some peat moss, which is, you know, plant material all broken down.
Decaying plant matter.
Right. And I've seen it, you know, with the proper treatment and aeration and a little bit of that added to a very clay acidic soil. I've seen it convert and turn into healthy topsoil.
Cool.
That's able to sustain a good seedling.
Cool.
And it only took a season. Millions of years.
Right. Just like in Hawaii where there are, you know, slopes now covered with plants and it was a volcano a couple hundred years ago.
Right.
All right.
And your little story about the flood one time, one of your flood tape series, I think you were talking about a little pond at Notre Dame.
Yeah.
And how the bigger stuff and the littler things kind of sorted themselves.
Right. In a flood, things float together to, you know, they find their own specific gravity or whatever, and a bunch of big mammoths float together in the north.
Right. I've done a lot of, you know, worked in new home sites where there was nothing but topsoil. They hadn't put the sod on top of the dirt yet, but it rained real hard overnight after they did the work. And you come there the next day and you're working and you see these big eroded areas where the rain hit the side of the building and the gutters weren't installed yet or something. And it looks like these miniature scale Grand Canyons.
Absolutely. And we've seen it now. We have large examples of floods where they make it look like the Grand Canyon, like at Mount St. Helens. We got a video on it. Thank you, Rich.
And that's a great video, by the way.
All right.
That was my first video I ever ordered from you guys.
I'm thrilled you did. It was great. Mount St. Helens, and we got a whole case of them we just ordered.
The Steve Austin did it.
Yes, thank you, Rich. God bless you.
Hey, my and in case anybody wants to remember that name, just remember the $6 million man.
$6 million man. All right, Steve Austin. Excellent. Thank you, Rich. Appreciate that. And, hey, we've got these three albums that we did, Genesis Creation, Genesis the Fall, Genesis the Flood, talk about all this stuff. All right, a caller wanted to know, why don't we see evolution today? Huh? Oh, a statement. We don't see evolution today. And that's true. We don't. We don't see new capabilities evolving. And the evolutionists, to try to get out of it, that, they say, well, it happens so slowly you can't see it. Well, that would be true if you're watching only one species. If only one species you're watching, then it might take 100,000 years for anything of interest to happen. But there are a million living species on Earth. And so every year there should be dramatic, documented evolutionary advances. But there are none. Let's go back to the phones in Greeley, Colorado. Dave, speak your mind.
Hey, Bob, this is Dave.
Howdy, Dave.
Hey, you know what? I went to a judging Bible study tonight, and I choked. I let the judging population down.
Tell me what happened, Dave.
they were talking about how they had to be real careful not to judge, and they didn't know how the big laws. They knew how to do that, but the little laws, the little things, they didn't know what to do.
So you mean, you know, I had thought all the dinosaurs had died out, but you mean there are still Christians who think they're not supposed to judge?
Yeah, Roger, and I'm so mad at myself right now. I can't believe it.
Why didn't you take them apart?
I don't know.
You should have cleaned their clock.
should have.
Hey, because, you know, Jesus commands us to judge with righteous judgment.
Yes, exactly.
And there's
exactly.
a book of Judges in the Bible, and Paul said, I'm ashamed of you because you don't judge. But Christians have been listening to Hillary so long, they no longer quote John 3:16 as their favorite verse. They quote Hillary's favorite verse, judge not.
Exactly.
When Jesus said, don't judge, you hypocrite. First stop sinning and then judge. But they stop after the first two words. Thank you, Dave.
Hey, can I ask you one more question?
Yeah.
Hey, on DNA, you know how God would like two or more witnesses in a crime scene?
Yeah.
What do you think about DNA?
DNA evidence is definitely one of the witnesses.
Is it worth more, since we're getting it so sophisticated,
right?
Is it worth more than one?
Well, that's a very good question. In the Bible, God's point with two or three witnesses...
Mm-hmm.
Is that you didn't want to take the word of one witness who could have an ulterior motive, and then you convict someone who's not guilty on the basis of one person's testimony. But when you have, but the Bible, when it says you can only convict on the testimony of two or three witnesses, the Bible
uh-huh.
itself includes physical evidence as one of those witnesses.
So
if you have one witness and physical evidence, or if you have a videotape, because most criminals don't commit their crimes in front of an audience. They try to do it in secret. So if you have videotape, that's enough.
But I guess what I was getting at is DNA is so specific.
Yeah, DNA could be like videotape. But you have to be careful because, there could be DNA on a victim from a dozen different people.
Oh, that's true. Yeah.
And if the victim now is dead and you find DNA, you need some other evidence to indicate that, yeah, this guy was there at the time, had the opportunity. You need some other, depending on the circumstance.
Yeah, that makes sense. That's a good point.
All right. Hey,
okay, Bob.
Thank you so much. Appreciate that.
Bye-bye.
Let's go to the phones in Michigan. Tom, speak your mind.
Hi, Bob. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Hey, a quick comment. In the media, whenever they report a crime and there's maybe a dozen eyewitnesses and maybe a videotape or whatever, they speak with the word alleged.
Yeah, right.
For everything they say. Whenever they report these dates for the fossils, they never do that.
They don't say alleged.
Right.
Yeah, good point. And they never say that they are alleged journalists.
Yeah.
Why don't they throw that in there? We don't have any proof that they're journalists. Especially when they say they're not biased.
Right.
Why don't they say, we at the New York Times, the allegedly unbiased media. But anyway, good point. So go ahead. Hey, you had an answer for the question about the fall.
Well, I'll take a stab at it. I've never heard any of your... Bible study albums, but I've read the plot a couple years ago, and I'm starting to reread it.
All right.
I hope I don't embarrass myself.
No, you won't. Was it? Do you think Adam sinned 1,000 years after he was created?
Definitely 100? Not.
100? 1 year? Or a month? Or which of those different?
So far, I'd say it's definitely less than 100 years, because he had Seth when he was 130.
All right, less than 100 years.
He had a couple kids before that who were full grown.
Okay, less than 100 years.
So, but I tend to think that it was probably a good bit sooner than that.
So as an order of magnitude, it certainly wasn't 1,000 or 100. maybe a good bit. We're going to leave it right there, Tom.
Okay.
Thank you for your call, and we really have narrowed it down in our albums. This is Bob and Yurt reminding you to do right and risk the consequences.